I'm Daniel Chacon. Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire. Today, my guest is author Silvia Seleni. We've had her on the show before, but this time we are going... What was the book that we talked about last time?
This, but the Spanish, version.
Okay, okay. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. So what was it called in English? I mean, in Spanish
In Spanish is Todo Eso Es Yo.
Todo Eso Es Yo. That's it. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's funny because as I was reading this book, and we're going to talk about it. Sorry, I'm losing track of the introduction, but I'll get to that introduction. When I was reading this book, I kept thinking, oh my God, I know this book. I know this book. And it wasn't until later I realized it was a translation of that book that we had talked about. But this version is called The Everything I Have Lost. And it's brand new, hot off the presses from Cinco Puntos.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Your first book in English.
Yes.
But it's not a translated book, is it?
It is not. When we talked last time, I was working in figuring out what's going on with the book in English. So I started translating it. It was not working. And then I decided to sort of rewrite the book in English. So it's a longer version. I believe it's even a better version than the Spanish. I mean, it's the same character, same diary situation. But I think more elements came along the way that had to do with language.
And what was it called again in Spanish?
Todo Eso Es Yo.
So why didn't you call it that? Why did you call it The Everything I Have Lost?
It was not there. It was the translation was missing, I think, something in it. And we came with the idea of my everything. But then later on, we realized that really it's about what she loses throughout the way.
Yeah.
So I worked with Liebert, who I absolutely adore, and we came up together with this new title, and we're very excited about it.
Right, right. Well, it's a fantastic book. I really enjoyed reading it. But let me just tell people who you are. You're Silvia Seleni. You are from Sonora, Mexico. You have published, I don't know how many books in the last 10 years. I don't know how you do it, but because you're a professor of instruction here at the University of Texas El Paso in our Department of Creative Writing. You are the director of the online MFA. You are the founder and director of Casa Octavio, which, you know, we might be able to talk about a little bit.
Yeah.
You travel all over Latin America and the United States giving workshops and presentations, yet you're still writing, what, a book a year, two books a year?
Sometimes. Sometimes, you know, it's a book that it was like behind somewhere in a drawer and you go back to it. So it feels like it was just a year working on it. But you've been on a book for years in a way.
Oh, you mean the graveyard.
The document graveyard. This wasn't that bad after all.
That happened to me with Cholo Tree. I had no idea I had a complete novel written. And one day I was just kind of bored and I was going through it and I found this novel. It was called very kind of stupidly The Last Chicano Novel. And I go, what the heck is that? And it was a whole novel. So that happens to you.
That happens a lot. It happens a lot. And you find a short story and you're like, wait, these characters were like revisiting. And then you end up with a novel with something more going on. I'm working right now on something that is going through notes and agendas, things like read here and there. So I rescue things from graveyard. So it's not that I write every day. It's just I rescue, I edit.
You bring them back from the dead like your stories are Lazarus
dead.
Or something. That's awesome. So you are a professor of instruction here at the University of Texas, El Paso, and you also got your MFA here at the University of Texas, El Paso. And one of the interesting things is I think you were in a few of my classes, but you know you had so many different classes and you were really a fantastic writer, as all of our MFA candidates tend to be. Like right now we have in the studio Sergio Godoy. Sergio, say hello.
Hello.
We're going to introduce Sergio a little bit later on. He's our intern for Words on a Wire, but he's also in the MFA program. And we have the luxury of choosing the best writers.
Yes, over.
And so, you know, obviously you were a good writer, but what was really interesting, I remember this and I respected it, that your thesis was not a book of poems. It was not a book of fiction. It was a translation.
Yeah. And I think, so I had a project I remember for my thesis, but along the way, I sort of discovered translation through Rosa Alcala and realized how translation, we do it all the time. Bilingual, we're always translating in our minds, but seeing translation as a process for creative writing. So I think what I learned from translation helped in what came afterwards in my own writing. Yeah.
Well, that's why I say I respect it so much, because I'm thinking, well, here is a writer who's so serious about her writing that she's going to focus all this attention she can get from her thesis chair and her thesis committee, not on a work of fiction, but on translation, because ultimately it's going to reinforce what she's doing
exactly.
in fiction.
And I think this is what happened precisely with this book, because I started translating it and it wasn't working. And it's only when you realize, do not translate, write what you mean in the other language. And I know this is something we kept discussing, Rosanna, when we were working on that thesis. So it was a matter of looking at the scene, at the situation, and then finding its own words in Spanish, because you're also translating emotions, situations, etc., that I might be lost in a way, but they gain in a different terms, in terms of language and imagery. Yeah.
And you know, I know that, you know, I'm a fiction writer, and I tried a book of poems one time, but it never went anywhere. But I'm a fiction writer, and Sergio, you're a fiction writer too. You're a fiction writer. And I know that 99% of the time, if not even 100% of the time, when I enter into a story, I'm entering into it through language, through sound, through voice, through rhythm.
Definitely.
And I imagine if you were to translate your own work, that you would be missing something by just trying to translate that voice into a, you know, in
exactly. So there's something that is missing, because it's a different language. But then I have understood now that I have also, I don't want to say different sensations, but different ways to understand in language.
Right.
So we do it in El Paso all the time. We always, you know, code switching, right? For certain things or certain emotions, we use Spanish or we use English. And I think this is something that I finally realized that I'm conscious of, or are more conscious of when I was writing with this book, because it has to do with language.
Right. And you're in a really unique situation. I don't think there's very many writers who can write books in both languages.
Yeah.
I mean, occasionally you find one. Mm-hmm. I think Samuel Beckett was able to write in two languages. But you know, and I think that if you aren't able to do that, then it's probably best to let somebody else translate your work.
Yeah.
But if you're able to find that voice and find that language, and you've been teaching at the university level for, you know, a few years, and you teach entirely in Spanish, I mean, in English. So I imagine that there are certain English language texts that you enter into and just say, wow, this is, you know, you are influenced by what you read.
Yeah, because language is an experience in the end. It's a life experience. So I remember in the past I would think that, no, I cannot translate my own work because it's going to become something else. But I saw it as if it was a problem. It's not a problem. Mm. I mean, because now I'm thinking of a different type of reader and of a different type of experience that I want to portray here. But I remember teaching, the first time I started teaching here at UTEP, my first intro to creative writing, I think we were talking about poetry, and I was like, what's this word in English? Because I've been, I had been teaching about poetry in Mexico in the past, but then it was like the concept. Like, I know what it is, I know when I see it, but what's going on? So in a way, I started teaching creative writing, became to me another way to readdress a language that I thought I knew. I thought I knew English, but you don't until you get to experience
that's
it.
Interesting. Yeah. Do you remember what the word was?
I don't remember. You know, it must be something silly like stanza. Because I was like, estrofa. And I was like, how the hell do you say that in English? Right? So I had to sort of learn again some concepts and also learn different ways of addressing poetry. Because the way we analyze poetry in Spanish is different, because we use syllabic mode and in English we use accents. Mm. So that changed my life. I think that's why, I mean, in many ways, I think teaching has helped me become a better writer.
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
I was already writing, yes. But now, it's completely different.
You know, the best job for a writer to have is teaching writing.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
and even more so, teaching creative writing.
Yes, exactly.
Because you can teach composition and be stuck in that language. And the thing is, we are influenced by what we read. And so if we're always reading these, you know, essays for freshman composition, not to sound like a snob, because I don't mean that at all, because I think, you know, I couldn't write an essay, you know, that would get published in freshman anthologies. But to have that constant talking about beautiful works of literature.
Exactly. It's like a constant reminder of what are you doing? What are you reading? What are you understanding of this? And it's fun how you're in a class and sometimes you say something, you're like, oh my God, I do know this.
Oh, that's true.
I didn't know I knew this. You know, not that you improvise, but you surprise yourself. So I hopefully your students do learn something, but every class, I think every class, we learn something else about writing, about other authors, about your own craft.
And that's one of the things that makes you a great professor. I remember not too long ago, I was teaching, this semester I'm teaching an intro creative writing class because I'm training one of our graduate students in the classroom. And I was walked in the elevator the other day, and you walked in the elevator. We're both on the way to class. And I says, yeah, I got to teach an intro to creative writing class. And I go, what a bummer. And you go, why? I says, because they're not creative writing majors. They, you know, they don't really care about creative writing. They're just taking it for the – and you go, oh, no. They're beautiful, and what they do is, you know, and I thought, wow, my God, you know, what I'm losing focus here. So I went in that class, and I expected beauty from everybody, and now we're going over their first poems, and I'm finding it. So thank you for reminding me of that.
I almost stopped the elevator. What are you talking about? They're great.
You got to share your enthusiasm
because they bring something different to the class. You don't have your normals. You have sociology, criminology, and they have a different way to experience things in life. And obviously, their writing is going to reflect that. So you want a diverse classroom in many ways.
And, you know, I'm thinking of Thomas Merton, the great Catholic poet, priest, mystic philosopher who wrote this beautiful autobiography called Seven Story Mountain. Mm-hmm. And he talks about the best teacher he's ever had, best professor he's ever had. It was a Shakespeare professor. He said the reason why he was so great is because he didn't tell us what we should know about Shakespeare. He didn't expect us to know about Shakespeare. He shared what he loved about Shakespeare.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we do in the class.
Yeah, yeah, in the end, if you don't have passion, then you should be, you know, on a desk or something, because you need to, in a way, engage students to writing and reading and discussing your pieces of work.
Right, absolutely. Sylvia, let's talk a little bit about your character in this novel, The Everything I Have Lost, that just came out with Cinco Puntos. And I bet it must have been a pleasure working with Cinco Puntos.
It was amazing. It was amazing because I think something that happens in Mexico, like you write a book, somebody accepts it and it gets published, but you don't get a conversation on your book. And it's something I do in Casa Octavia, this part of the editing world that the United States has and sometimes Latin America doesn't have it. And so with Cinco Puntos, it was not only that they accepted the book, but that they worked with me to make the book even better, improve as many things, explore things that I wasn't willing or daring to explore. So it was I think it was a collaboration in many ways.
I know a lot of people who have published with Cinco Puntos, including Benjamin Sainz, and then Sergio Troncoso has a book coming out.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I constantly hear is what an amazing editor Lee Bird is.
She's amazing. Yeah, I work with Jessica and I work with Lee, and I would go to her office. We would sit down for hours and discuss and talk. So it was very nice because, I mean, you think your book is done, but it's not. There's so many little things that matter, especially because this is for young adults, right? Mm-hmm. So for young readers, there's something else. You cannot be overprotecting them, and at the same time, you want to leave certain things for them to explore later on. So it was a great process.
Yeah,
I think it's better than in Spanish. Definitely, I think it's better than in the Spanish.
Wow, really. I really enjoyed reading it in Spanish, but I also enjoy it in English.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I do think that it's a lot more fleshed out, this version.
Yes, definitely.
And,
definitely.
The character is a lot more fleshed out as well. And so let's talk about this character. Her name is Julia.
Mm-hmm.
She's a child. I think she starts when she's about 12 and goes until she's like 15 years old.
Yeah.
But let's talk a little bit about her and how she became the subject of this novel or how you found her.
Okay. So when I moved to El Paso in 2010, my son came to live with me in 2011. He started going to middle school.
Oh, and he's like an adult now.
He's adult. He's 20. He's 20, and he's in UTS San Antonio. He's studying cybersecurity. Yeah. Anyway, so he would tell me about the kids in middle school, how they're kids and boys and girls that come all the way from Juarez. And he was like, I can't believe, like, they wake up super early, they cross, and then they take a bus to get to school, and they do that every day. He was like, and they do that on themselves. And he was like all wondering about that. So I think it was his questions that made me consider, like, what's going on with these kids, right? Not only the immigration and the whole situation with the students that we have at UTEP, but what's going on with kids? How do they see this constant traveling? And then I took it into how do they see those horrible years in Juarez? So when I started with the idea of the book, I thought it was a boy and a grandmother. But then I was like, I don't have that experience. I mean, I have my son, but I don't have that experience. So I thought it was easier to work with my own way of seeing things. So I gifted the character with some of my ideas of how to portray the world. But then I was thinking, how would a little girl see this world? How would she talk about it? How would she address this situation? Because she's growing up in the end. She's coming of age. Dad is not around all the time. Mom is more focused on dad than anything else. So what would she say about it? So I think the more I work with the book with Lee, I think we ended up learning more about this girl and the vision she has of the politics and the society and language especially.
There's this beautiful section in the book where she's standing in part of the city of El Paso where she can see both Juarez and El Paso. Mm-hmm. And I'll read a little bit. She said, I saw Juarez, I saw El Paso. Juarez, El Paso, two places that are really one bridge apart, two places that are one. And anyway, it's a lovely moment. But what struck me is in your Spanish version, you avoided using the word Juarez altogether. You avoided the word El Paso. But here, it's very clearly, you know, part of the language. And so why that? Why were you able to do it in this book?
I think what happened in that first book, I was like, can I do that? Can I write about this? Even though I don't live there, I have those things that I know many writers, we have that, like, can I do that? Can I be responsible of that? So I was very shy. Right. But then Lee was like, girl, what are you doing? You live here. Like, you've been here for so many years. Just call things by their name. Right. And I think the moment that happened, I was able to grab.
Yes.
And that's why I think it's a better book in those terms. Because I'm talking about this. Like, you
totally
have to pay attention
to this. I totally agree, yeah.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, my idea with the version in Spanish was like it was a universal experience of living in two cities or two countries. We know that happens for Russian and Finland, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But I thought it changed definitely because he was kind of like owning it, which is what the girl is doing. I think the girl was owning it more than I was back at the time.
Right. Yeah. Right. And this is a novel that I imagine will do well with young adult readers. And in fact, I would imagine that it is classified as a YA novel. And I think you've written, the Spanish version of this was a YA novel. Have you done YA novels
other than that? You know, it wasn't. I just wrote a novel about a girl, but I wasn't thinking it was a young adult.
That's exactly what I wanted to ask you. Yeah. Did you know? No. It was going to be a YA novel.
No, I didn't. I didn't. When I wrote the first in Spanish, I was like, this is just a novel. Right. So when I started the conversation with Lee, she said, this is a young adult. I was like, is it?
Yes.
But it's so heavy. And she was like, yes, it is. So we started working with that focus, and I think that helped me a lot to provide more, you know, me to the novel. At some point in the process, when we were sending out copies for blurbs, one of the readers was like, no, this is not young adult. They're talking about violence and rape and this and that.
And even a few bad words here
and
there.
Yes, exactly. So he was like very, very upset about the book. Uh-huh. So Lee tells me that, and I'm like, oh, my God, what are we going to do? I was like, we have already this book. And Lee's like, what are we going to do? We're just not going to use him, you know? The readers want this. This is what the kids want. This is the language they're talking. Like, we want to, you know, believe they're innocent, but they're not. And I was like, oh, okay, so we're good. And she was like, yes, of course we're good. So I think I found my genre now. I definitely want to go back to young adult.
Right. And let me ask you something. I think it's a really important question to go deeper into this question, because if you're writing with the young adult, you know, mentality, or, you know, actually that's not a really good way to put it. If you're writing, intending to write a YA novel, and as opposed to just intending to write a novel, you might make some aesthetic decisions based on the form.
Yes.
Which could weaken the novel. And I didn't feel like I was reading a young adult novel, even though I was completely aware that I was reading a young adult novel. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it's sort of, it makes you feel like I have to be careful, but no, all the way around, because this is a reader that it's able to grasp more things than our parents or grandparents, right? So I think it gives you certain freedom to play and be more daring and challenging with form, I think. It was freedom completely. I never understood. I mean, after years of publishing, you understand certain things.
And, you know, speaking of form, and the way I take form, the meaning for me of form is not structure per se, but it's just the organic, the way the novel organically appears on the page, and how everything kind of fits in somehow. Mm-hmm. And I love the form of this, and I love the use of lists. In fact, it starts with the list, and I think what is the list is kind of cool. It says. Here's the list. It's what it starts with. Bubblegum flavored lipstick, a pair of purple scissors, a box of 12 crayons, a Hello Kitty notebook, a keychain that said, I love Texas, that Thea gave me, my old diary. It starts with the list. And this list happens to be things that she's lost.
Yeah.
Because the car was stolen.
Yeah.
Right, right. But I'm wondering about this list, how these lists sometimes might have seen the voice grow out of them, the experience grow out of them, like how these lists are so packed with energy that you know. Tell me about the use of these lists.
So I think something I learned through writing this book, first in Spanish, because Spanish the lists are also there. It's focusing in character. I think what I'm doing now more and more is character writing.
Yeah.
So if this character is this age and she's writing a diary, she would do a list.
Right.
In the Spanish version, we have the drawings. We took them out for this version.
There was one, though. There was one drawing in this.
There was one, and in the end, I think we're taking it out. But it was sort of like, listen to the character. The character would do this. Right? The character would not do this long paragraph.
Right.
There would be bad days, and she would be, I hate this day, period, right? And that's the only entry of the diary. So I think this exploration of form is there as a response of the character, right? So it's part of the characters. That's not me. That's not my decision.
Yeah.
So it's part of the character listening to what they would do, et cetera. And this is when I go with the freedom that it gives you to working with a character who's young. Because he would, you know, make sense or not make sense or say something coarse or leave a blank page because it has to do with his own personality.
Right. And there's something rich about a list when you know you're talking about character. I remember Lex Williford, one of our professors, would give his students an assignment. Okay, open a refrigerator, tell me what's inside of it and what that says about the character.
Yeah.
Right.
I do that with my students and I tell them open a pocket or open a backpack or something and see what's out.
Right.
And then I ask them to take one of those objects and write about how did the object get there. So it's another way to getting to know your character. So I did it all the way around. We're knowing the character through her own thinking.
In fact, that's one of the things I was going to ask you. As a professor of creative writing, do you sometimes give creative exercise telling your students to make a list?
Oh, yeah, lists. I have done diaries. I have done drawings.
Uh-huh.
So I try to play around. I mean, if I am doing this in my own writing, I need to, and it's working, then I would definitely going to share with my students.
Yeah, her car was stolen. Her parents' car was stolen at the beginning, and those were the things that she initially lost. Bubblegum flavored lipstick, you know, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, it would be completely different. For example, if it were my list, it would be a crack pipe, a marijuana vape. No, I'm kidding. But no, yeah. And then with Sergio, he's such a nice guy. His list would be Bible, lost the Bible.
Toothpaste, toothbrush.
but yeah, and I love how these lists keep coming back.
Definitely a very interesting project in many ways since the very beginning in Spanish, because I was doing it when I was doing my thesis at the same time. That's why I was saying, like, my thesis helped me in so many ways. But working with Cinco Puntos, I think, helped me visualize that all writing is political. So there's something on that within the book, I believe, and I'm happy with it.
I like that. All writing is political. I think that the claim of neutrality is false, especially for writers.
Yeah.
And you have this wonderful moment where you're talking about, they're telling the PE teacher was killed, but they don't use the word killed. They say she died. And then Julia starts to reflect on that. Why do they never say that they killed? Died, killed. You know, they say they died, and it kind of, you know, somehow softens it. But it shows that even she's, because she thinks about language a lot, mm-hmm. and because she's, you know, obviously she's going to grow up to be a writer, that's a kind of reflection of how writing is not neutral.
Yeah, exactly. And also this perspective the kids have, how can you not question this if you're in the frame of the border, Ciudad Juarez during those horrible years, etc. You cannot not question that, right? So it needs to be there,
right?
Because we're part of a community.
Well, Sylvia, congratulations on this book. It's called The Everything I Have Lost, and it's already out.
Going to be out very, very, very soon. Well, I think it's already for the pre-sale. For the blind, it's going to be around. Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
Cool. Well, I know this is going to do well, and I know it's going to expand your audience, and because you're very well known in Mexico, and you're making your mark in Latin America, and now this is really going to open up markets. So we're really happy to. Before we go, I would like to introduce to our listeners our new intern. His name is Sergio Godoy. Is that your full name?
Sergio Andres Godoy Prieto.
Oh my God, that's a beautiful name. Is that your writer's name?
No, it's my full name. My mother thought of it because it rhymes.
It sort of say it again. Well, I didn't hear the rhyme. Say it again.
Sergio Andres Godoy Prieto. Like, it
that's
rhyme.
Not. No,
that's beautiful.
But that's the writer name. Are you going to use that on your books?
I would like to. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, it's a good name. And you are a first-year MFA student here in our program, and you are a TA working, and you're going to work with us on Words on a Wire. So I wanted everybody to know who you are in case you send them an email or something. And you're also the son of Oscar Godoy, the Colombian fiction writer who was a student here years ago. And so even though you're from Colombia, you have a little history in El Paso.
I did. I came here when I was a junior, and I graduated from El Paso High.
Wow.
So I know a little bit of I met people who came from Juarez and to study
here. Cross every day.
Yeah, they cross every day. And then I went back to Colombia to study film. I'm back writing.
Well, welcome back. And I hope your experience here ends up being rich and wonderful. Sylvia, before we go, can we just plug Casa Octavio? We have 1 minute, so just really in a nutshell.
So Casa Octavio is a writer's residence for women that write in Spanish. It doesn't have to be from Latin America. We're expanding a little bit, or they're working on translation. We open submissions once a year, and we receive 2 writers. We have half writers from Colombia. We're going to have 1 writer from Argentina next semester. And basically, they send their project. They propose an exchange with a university, and they come and write.
And one writer who was here a couple of years ago not only won a major literary prize in Mexico, but she's also a first-year MFA student. Tell us a little bit about her.
Alaide Ventura, she won the Mauricio Achar, which is one of the most important.
Say her name again.
Alaide Ventura, she won the Mauricio Achar Prize, which is one of the most important in Mexico. And she wrote this book in Casa Octavia. When she came to Casa Octavia, she took classes with Professor Nelson Cárdenas and Tim Hernandez. And she was like, I want to be in this program. She applied, she was accepted, and now she's part of our board.
Yeah, she's fantastic. Yeah. And anyway, thank you so much for everything you do for our community and everything you do for literature. And Sergio, thank you for joining the Words on a Wire team. And I'm Daniel Chacon. Thank you for joining us. And we'd like to thank our producer, Sam Cassano. Am I saying that right, Sam? I butchered it. How do you say your last name? That's what I said. Sam Cassiano. That's exactly what I said. My God. Anyway, thank you, Sam. And thank you, everybody. We'll see you next week on Words on a Wire.